Are you ready to have some fun this morning? Choose your own adventure novels. In the early 1980s throughout the 1990s, sold millions of copies. Choose Your Own Adventures allow you, the reader, to make the decision of how the plot unfolds. You are part of the adventure and the excitement. You determine which way the story goes. One of my favorites, The Abominable Snowman. Are you ready to experience this page turner with me? You are a mountain climber. 3 years ago, you spent the summer at a climbing school in the mountains of Colorado. Your instructors said that you had natural skill as a climber. You made rapid progress, and by the end of the summer, you were leading difficult rock and ice climbs. Last year, you were chosen to join an international team. The expedition made it to the top of two unclimbed peaks in South America. One night on that expedition, the group was seated around the cook tent at base camp. The expedition leader, Franz, begins to tell you about climbing in the Himalayas. Franz tells you about the legend of the abominable snowman. Franz says, no one has ever photographed one. And inside your soul, a challenge has been laid down and you're excited. Here come the choices. If you decide to drop everything and search for the abominable snowman, turn to page 7. If you decide to return home for further research and future plans, turn to page 8. What are we going to do? Page 7. Come on, here we go. You turn to page 7 and find out that your climbing partner, Carlos, is lost. No one has heard from him for hours. A snowstorm is coming and you have to move. A trusted climber, Justin, informs you that the abominable snowman is in the valley below base camp. What will you do? And so, if you decide to follow your new friend Justin below base camp, turn to page 9. If you decide to wait out the snowstorm and find Carlos, turn to page 13. Dun, 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 dun. The suspense is killing you. We turn to page 9 and the trail becomes very steep and no one, and on one side falls off more than 1,000 feet. You make it to a small stone house where an old woman hands you a note from Carlos. The note reads, "Don't follow. Wait at base camp." If you listen to Carlos and return to base camp, turn to page 20. If you ignore Carlos's message and decide to look for him, turn to page 15. It wouldn't be much of an adventure if we waited for him. So we turn to page 15, and the woman right before you leave speaks rapidly in Nepali. And you think you hear her say, "Your friend is with the abominable snowman." Your heart beats fast as you head down the trail. You see huge footprints. All of a sudden, the birds stop singing. A huge group of abominable snowmen are pointing a golden cannon at you. You throw your hands in the air and plant your face in the snow. And that is the last thing you remember. Because you wake up in your bed and your mom is hollering at you, get up and get ready for school. Dun, 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 dun. Yes. So choose your own adventure novels. Pivot on disappointment. As you react to how the story unfolds, and as you choose to turn to one page or another, there's disappointment after disappointment. And you start to have to learn to live in this disappointment, finding your way forward. And it turns out sometimes in this novel, you find what you're looking for, but other times you don't. And so in these novels, they have 28 alternative endings, which is amazing because you can go back through and try over and over again. Sometimes what happens is you find that abominable snowman, you take that world-class picture, your Facebook page blows up, you're a world-class speaker everywhere, and everything is right with the world. And other times you come home brokenhearted, disappointed with the experience. And so I submit to you this morning that our lives are not unlike a choose-your-own-adventure novel. Life, this incredible thing we share with one another, is a meandering trail filled with disappointments everywhere. But sometimes, a surprising turn leads you to a mountain peak where your heart bursts with satisfaction and meaning. We live in this world of disappointments after disappointments, with these glimpses of hope shot through every once in a while. And so, disappointments. What does this word mean? Disappointment from the Latin is dis, which means apart or asunder. And then from the second word, appointment, a designated time or place. So at its root, I wonder, do you remember that feeling when someone that you had hoped to meet up for a coffee or for a lunch, all week long you'd hoped and they didn't show up? Or even worse, that time where you had hoped for that meeting at the end of the week, for that cup of coffee, that cup of tea, and not only did they not show up, but you sat there for an hour, no call, no text, nothing. Disappointment, right? So can we dive deeper on what this idea of having a disappointed heart really means? So disappointment is when something fixed comes apart. It's when all those hopes that we had are unrealized. You may never have faced the disappointment of an epic journey to the Himalayas hunting down the abominable snowman. But you know what it's like to face disappointment at work, in your relationships, with your friends, with your family, even in your home. You know what it's like when all your planning and all your dreaming and all your expectations collapse in on you. Unrealized hopes. And when our hearts beat with the reality of disappointment after disappointment, it's hard to keep going, isn't it? We feel like we're in this sort of holding pattern with our life. It's easy to close up, to play it safe and secure. I've often wondered, how do people move forward when their hearts are disappointed? And then, of course, all you're wondering is about that personal question that we ask ourselves. How do I find healing when my heart has been crushed by disappointment? So in chapters 37 to 50 of the book of Genesis, the first book in the Bible, there's this incredible story about a man named Joseph. And we learned from the very beginning of the story, Joseph is 17, and Joseph's dad just loves his son, buys him a multicolored robe. Some of you know this is the amazing Technicolor dream coat of the famous play. And so right away, this is not a great move to do when you have 11 brothers. And so you see this deep disappointment that's brewing with his brothers, whereas Joseph has this really awesome coat, right? But then there's this other thing. Joseph has these dreams. And Joseph dreams one night that the sun and the moon and the stars and the solar systems all bow down before him. Now, mental note, when you have dreams like these, you need to keep them to yourself. Joseph decides to share them with his 11 brothers. And the translation is, yes, my brothers, you will bow before me. This does not breed trust and brotherly love amongst your brothers, in case you didn't know. And so, of course, as the story goes, this anger and this jealousy starts to brew with his brothers until finally his brothers decide they've had it. Their anger has festered to the point of like full-blown hatred towards Joseph, and they make a plot to kill him. The Bible, always honest and real. And so then Reuben, one of the younger brothers, says, no, we can't kill him, but let's make a better plan. So then Reuben allows them to beat him up, to rip his robe apart, to throw him in a pit, and to sell him into slavery. And so there sits Joseph in the bottom of a pit, without food, without water. All these great hopes and expectations that he had for his life collapsing upon him. Literally, thinking I have been betrayed and abandoned. He's living with this disappointed heart, not knowing what is next. He's handcuffed and made to make the long trek to Egypt. And then it doesn't even get any better after this, because when he's in Egypt, he goes to work for Potiphar, a governor of the Pharaoh. And while he's at Potiphar's house, he begins to sort of recover from this disappointed heart. But all of a sudden, Potiphar's wife accuses him of seducing her, and he's thrown into prison. So there's Joseph, again in this pit of disappointment, right? Finding that those dreams from his childhood squashed, collapsed. And then The story gets incredible because it's there that the Bible tells us this really interesting thing. It's there we see something shimmer for us. And we ask ourselves honestly, how did Joseph move forward when his heart was disappointed? And it's at this point that the story tells us four different times the Lord was with him. So in that deep dungeon of a jail cell, as he's trying to recover from everything that had been so disappointing, the narrator makes this point, the Lord was with him. And it's a funny phrase to us. It doesn't mean somehow that God gave him superpowers. It doesn't mean that somehow that everything instantaneously changed for Joseph. No, he's in a jail cell. It meant that God was working on the inside of Joseph, that something was being transformed within him, that all these disappointments were somehow going to turn into something new, something with newer, brighter possibilities. And then what happens at this point in the story is you start to see this subtle shift in Joseph. He starts to begin to see things differently. He starts to see opportunities. So instead of, and the key here, instead of telling people about his own dreams, he begins to learn and listen to other people's dreams. And he learns to interpret them. So there's this huge shift in the story from being someone that wanted to share his dreams with the world to listening to other people's dreams and sending them on their way. And so he begins to be more flexible with his own dreams and his own heart. And then before you know it, this dream interpretation, apparently it's a really good business in the ancient world, and he moves up in the world. He moves out of the jail cell. The Pharaoh of all Egypt hears about his ability to interpret dreams, and he moves into the house of Pharaoh. And then throughout his whole life, he begins this shift of moving up in this lifestyle, and he becomes the right-hand man of the Pharaoh, interpreting the great drought that is to come, and then at the very end, handing his brother bread and food and grain that they would have died if they wouldn't have had. So it's a great ending to the story. He caught the abominable snowman and got the picture to show for it. But the beautiful part is what the story has to teach us, is that the medicine for disappointment is a flexible heart. Is that when we are so bent on our own expectations, our own hopes, our own plans, and our own agendas, we can get so hardened and focused on them that we lose a sense of flexibility, a sense of openness to the possibilities of what God could be doing in our life. So Joseph thought that he was going to be the person that the sun and the stars and the solar system would bow to him. And throughout his journey, throughout the Lord being with him, his heart was able to be transformed to a heart that was flexible. And it's like this. Trees have to remain a sense of flexibility so that when the winds come, they can stay upright and stable. They have to be able to bend. Whereas older trees that begin to harden, strong winds come and they're knocked down. Because flexibility is about learning this movement in your heart, learning to loosen your grip on things, and learning to open up yourself to what God has to teach you, what God is doing in your world. Flexibility is not only loosening and letting go, but learning when there are seasons when you need to harden and hold yourself and make it through. So the medicine for a disappointed life is a flexible heart. Learning to unloose yourself from everything that you thought was so set and should have happened. Learning to see possibilities for who you are and how your gifts and how your life can unfold. So honest confession at this point. I know absolutely nothing about ice skating. And when I say nothing, I mean absolutely nothing. But I watch the Olympics with Stacy and she gets all teared up at ice skating stuff. So I have to watch it. And I did notice a week ago, Jeremy Abbott was on skates here, and he begins his routine, and he does what they call a quadruple jump right in the beginning, and he turns his skate the wrong way, and he lands. He falls hard, I mean hard onto the ice, and then he literally slides right into the boards, and it's like a hockey game out there, and so I'm really interested now, and he lands on the boards, and he just sits there. And there was like this long, dramatic pause. And honestly, like I felt for him. I was like, oh man, all the training, all the hours, all the ice time. He has given his life to this moment. When he was a kid, he dreamed about gold medals and standing on a platform. And now he is up against the board and everyone is looking at him. And he's in Russia. And that's really important because all of a sudden the fans start to clap. And I am like, oh my goodness. So we're talking like Americans. Americans clap. We clap for other Americans, right? You go to a football game, you clap. But these are Russians who see his dreams, his disappointment lying there on the ice. So this clap fills the stadium and he gets up and he starts skating again. And I'm like into this now. Best moment of the Olympics. And he gives the routine of his life. I mean, it was good. And afterward, I'm like, gold medal, gold medal. Apparently it doesn't work that way. There's no medal for this guy, even after that, which is wrong. And I was amazed by his ability. And I started thinking about it. I started thinking about the flexibility that it took for him. It was almost natural the way he just stepped up on the ice and started skating. It's almost as if he had fallen 100 times, maybe 1,000. He had been disappointed in competitions his whole life. But he learned that when you fall down, the only way to get rid of that disappointment is to get back up, to be flexible to whatever life gives you. So I was like, that's amazing. I want to be like Jeremy Abbott without the tight suit. And so I wonder this morning, how do we grow flexible hearts? And as this week I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking about spiritual practices and how you don't gain muscle by just like wanting to grow muscle. You have to literally work at it, right? It's the same way with faith. We have these spiritual practices that help us grow stronger, become the people we want to be. And so I started doing this little thing that I'm calling, just I call it flexing. And it's a practice that I want to invite you to. I just want to explain it to you now. So growing flexibility means three little steps that I walk through. And step one is naming the disappointment in your life. Just writing down the work, the job, the relationship, the business opportunity that got squashed, the something in school that didn't go the way you wanted it to. And just leaving it at that. And then step two, trying to describe that disappointment. The thoughts, the feelings, where you were at, why it made you so angry. And I found that like some of our disappointments are just ridiculous, you know. Like it really is absurd that we judge Jeremy Abbott's whole life based on the gold medal. The dude can skate and he's amazing. And that shouldn't minimize, so it's the Peyton Manning phenomenon, right? If he doesn't win a Super Bowl, he's no good. And so you name the disappointment in step one. You describe that disappointment. And then step three is crucial. You read Romans 5:5, a verse that says these beautiful words. God-infused hope does not disappoint us because God pours love into our hearts through the gift of the Holy Spirit. Literally, let this verse wash over you. And then allow yourself to loosen your grip on these disappointments, to look at that sheet or to think it in your mind, to let go of the disappointments that have crushed you, and to begin to open yourself to God's hope for you. And I find that I have to go repeat these steps over and over again, and I find that new disappointments come up. But when I'm going through a season of disappointment, it's these things, this activity called flexing, that helps me to move forward, that helps me to get up and to skate. Actually, you'd never want me to skate, ever. And so I remind you, that beautiful phrase as we conclude this morning, the Lord was with him. And I remind you that this is what God does. This is a God who flourishes human lives. This is a God who looks into your soul and breathes into your heart. This is a God who has promised forever and always, I am with you. This is a God who says, I will never leave you. So dear friends, this morning, when you face disappointments in your life, in your relationships, in this great world that we live in, remember the promise that God will be with you. Remember that God is growing within you a flexible heart.